Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Tuesday, the 16th of February, 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. This is episode 28 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week, we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to return one more time to the alternative medicine known as homeopathy. And tonight, we're going to look at the issue of just how the purveyors of this bogus form of medicine get away with it, how they manage to sell it through pharmacies and websites, and how the government does virtually nothing to protect the consumer. Then in our movie review, we'll have a look at the new French movie that's currently in the running to win the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film, A Prophet. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, let's have a look at the LGBT news now for the last week or so. And today we've got good news, bad news, and thrilling news. So let's take them in that order and go with the good news first, which this week comes from Portugal. Now, regular listeners to Reality Check will recall that back in early January, the Portuguese Parliament approved a bill to open up marriage there to same-sex couples. Well, apparently in Portugal, bills like that have to be approved by the Parliament twice, and the good news is that that happened last Thursday, the 11th of February. Parliament approved the bill for the second time. So all eyes are now on the conservative Portuguese president, Aníbal Cavaco Silva, who has 20 days in which to sign the bill into law or reject it. It's expected that he will sign, but even if he refuses and vetoes the bill, the parliament can apparently override his veto with a further vote. So yet another step taken in what now seems to be the inevitable advance towards full marriage equality in Portugal, most likely coming into effect within the next couple of months, sometime in April, hopefully, fingers crossed. Now, from that piece of good news, let's go to the bad news, which this week comes once again from East Africa, not Uganda this time, which we've been reporting on for the last few months, but from Uganda's next-door neighbour, Kenya. Now, it's still not clear exactly what happened here, but apparently rumours started circulating a couple of weeks ago that a same-sex wedding was being planned to take place last Friday, February 12th, in the seaside town of Matwapa, just north of Mombasa. A mob of hundreds of people armed with sticks, stones, kerosene, and other weapons gathered in the town last Friday and began attacking staff at a local HIV clinic and research centre whom they suspected of being gay. They then ransacked the homes of other suspected gay men. The police moved in and arrested not any members of the violent mob, but five men who were supposedly going to participate in this wedding ceremony. The next day, they arrested another man, meaning there are now six people in jail for no reason at all. Although apparently police have said that they're planning to charge them with the crime of homosexuality and to subject them to medical tests to supposedly prove these claims. Now, no one is exactly sure how the rumour about the wedding got started, but some suspect it may have just been an offhand joke. However it started, it appears that someone told it to the imam at his local mosque, who then told it to his congregation, some members of whom then broadcast it on the local radio, and eventually it was broadcast on national radio throughout Kenya. Various Muslim and Christian organizations then held press conferences to condemn the alleged wedding due to take place on February 12th. So this is an extremely frustrating, ridiculous example of homophobic mob violence and gross human rights violations, all committed with the collusion of the police as well as local religious leaders and politicians. Maybe most disturbing of all were the comments made by a former MP from the region, Omar Masumbuko, who publicly congratulated the police on a job well done and then told the mob that homosexuality must be stopped by any means and that they shouldn't even bother to bring the gay men they find to the police station but should just take care of the issue themselves. So a very, very grim situation there in Kenya, and one that is ongoing. Apparently the six detained men were due in court yesterday, but I haven't read anything about that yet. But whatever happens, we will of course inform you of any updates as they occur here on Reality Check. And finally, after that depressing news, let's finish off with some thrilling news, which comes from the capital city of Norway, Oslo. Because just 2 days ago there, on Sunday, February 14th, the international finals of the Worldwide Mr. Gay competition took place. And the winners were, in fourth place, Mr. Gay China, Xiaodai Muyi. Now, I'm sure you'll remember, dear listener, that a few weeks ago here on Reality Check, we reported that the Chinese authorities had shut down the Mr. Gay China pageant in Beijing, and so China wouldn't be sending anyone to the competition in Oslo. Well, apparently the organizers subsequently held a clandestine competition in a private venue, and Xiaodai won and got to go to Oslo, where he came fourth. In third place was Mr. Gay Hong Kong, Rick Dean Twombly. And in first place, yes, I know I've missed second place, but just bear with me a moment. So in first place was Mr. Gay South Africa, the 26-year-old Charles Vandenberg, who now holds the official title of Worldwide Mr. Gay. A statement issued by the organisers of the competition said that the aim of the event is to find a leader who can take on the responsibility of being a spokesman for the community and who can also speak out on equality and human rights on the world stage. Well, sounds like a noble goal. Incidentally, just as an aside, this was only the second ever worldwide Mr. Gay competition. It began only last year, the first event taking place in Whistler, Canada. Now, let's return to that second place position because, well, you see, that's the really thrilling news for tonight, because in second place in the worldwide Mr. Gay competition, meaning that he is the second most gorgeous, talented, intelligent, and all-round wonderful gay man in the entire world, And, well, actually, given that there aren't any other humans in the universe, as far as we know, in the entire observable universe, well, that title goes to our very own colleague and fellow presenter here at Joy 94.9, Mr. Gay Australia himself, Byron Adu. Yes, Byron, who presents Glitter and Tonic with Steve at 11 o'clock on Wednesday nights here on Joy 94.9. So, big congratulations, Byron. I don't think he's back in Australia yet, but when he arrives, we'll all be able to bask in the reflected glory of his magnificent achievement. So, very thrilling news indeed. Okay, so that concludes our LGBT news roundup for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we come back, we'll return to an issue we've been dealing with for a few weeks now on Reality Check, homeopathy. And we'll listen to a couple of interviews that try to answer the question, if homeopathy doesn't work, then how do they get away with promoting it and selling it everywhere as if it were a real medicine? So to find out, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Cruising for joy? It's safe listening. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was What Do You Want From Me by Adam Lambert. And that is the song of the moment. Very popular, I think. Okay, we move now into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And tonight we're going to return to a subject we've already spent 3 weeks examining, the alternative medicine known as homeopathy. In episodes 24 to 26, we analysed homeopathy in some detail and concluded that the science behind it is completely implausible, and scientific studies in fact show that it has no more effect than the placebo effect. In other words, homeopathy cannot work and does not work. So I'm not going to return to that discussion tonight. If you'd like to hear those episodes of Reality Check in which we completely debunk homeopathy, you can download them on our website, realitycheckonline.net. What I want to do tonight is look at the following question. If homeopathy cannot work and does not work, how do pharmacies and websites get away with selling it as medicine? It looks like medicine, it's packaged as medicine, it's sold as medicine. But isn't that misleading and deceptive? Shouldn't the government intervene somehow to protect the consumer? And is it ethical on the part of the pharmacist to sell these products as if they were some kind of normal medicine? Sure, homeopathic products are labelled discreetly as homeopathic, but I suspect that the vast majority of people don't know exactly what homeopathy is. Most just think it's some kind of herbal or natural remedy and don't realise that most homeopathic preparations contain none or only trace amounts of any possible ingredient. So to answer these questions, I interviewed a couple of experts in the field, and it's those interviews that we're going to hear tonight. First up, let's go to an interview I did with John Bell, who is speaking on behalf of the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia. That society is the main professional organisation for pharmacists in Australia and represents about 70% of the pharmacy profession. Now, just before we hear that interview, by way of background, I should mention that the TGA is the Therapeutic Goods Administration, the body in Australia with the responsibility for regulating all forms of medicine. Homeopathic remedies, unlike normal pharmaceuticals, do not have to go through a complicated registration process of proving safety, quality, and efficacy. They can just be listed and sold with no requirement to prove that they work. Okay, now that I've explained that, let's listen to the interview. Joining me on the line now is John Bell. John is a pharmacist in Sydney, and he's also a principal advisor to a health information program run by the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia. And he's speaking with us today on behalf of the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia. Welcome to Reality Check, John.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, John, we've been looking at homeopathy for the last few weeks on the show, and from our examination, we have concluded that given everything that we know about physics, chemistry, and pharmacology, homeopathy can't work, and in fact, clinical trials show that it doesn't work. And so it may come as a surprise to listeners that even given those facts, homeopathy is pretty much available in almost all pharmacies throughout Australia. Now, doesn't this create a kind of an ethical conflict for pharmacists?
Tony, I think it certainly creates an ethical dilemma. The surprise is not only from your point of view and your listeners, but insofar as I'm concerned as well, there's some surprise that some pharmacists seem to endorse the concept of homeopathy. Not all, mind you, and I know that some pharmacists stock homeopathic products. I don't believe they should. Certainly, I would be very surprised and disappointed if pharmacists actually recommended them, but there's certainly a market-driven demand for them. And one of the problems that we face as pharmacists is that some doctors, not many in Australia, but some doctors actually prescribe and recommend homeopathic products. I agree with you. There is no basis for homeopathy. Scientifically, it's been proven to not have any effect other than a very strong placebo effect. It is an ethical dilemma, and one that I'm hoping the Pharmaceutical Society can help to resolve. We're addressing the issue of complementary medicines this year. I mean, we've been aware of this issue, of course. We've had guidelines. We do have guidelines in relation to complementary medicines, and I hesitate to lump homeopathy with complementary medicines because I think they're non-medicines. I think there should only be medicines and no medicines, and homeopathic medicines don't qualify at all.
Right, as they don't contain any active ingredient.
That's right, they don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just read a clause here from the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia Code of Professional Conduct. And clause 1.2 says a pharmacist must not sell any medicinal product where there is reason to doubt its safety, quality, or, and this is the important word, efficacy. And so, of course, the homeopaths say, well, it's safe. Of course it's safe. It's just water or it's just sugar. But the question here is efficacy. So on the face of it, it would seem that pharmacists who sell homeopathy are, in fact, breaching that code of professional conduct.
I can understand that interpretation of the code, and I'm sympathetic with it personally, Tony, and this is why the Pharmaceutical Society is seeking to address this issue and give more clear guidelines. I suppose you could say that that's pretty clear in itself. I guess one of the difficulties is, as I already mentioned, about many doctors prescribing the product, but also I think we're being let down rather seriously by our legislators in Australia, where the Therapeutic Goods Administration, which is responsible for the overview of all therapeutic substances, including medicines, of course, allows these products not only to be sold and provided without prescription and indeed rather freely, but allow claims to be made, and although supposedly claims are not allowed to be made for products that are not properly registered, these products are, as the terminology applies, listed as medicines, despite the fact that they have no proven efficacy. And you could argue very effectively that they have proven non-efficacy. I think that this is something that we need to address as a community and lobby the legislators to disallow this, because this is one of the things that creates a problem and an ethical dilemma for pharmacists, as well as enormous confusion for the community. And I think the community is being deliberately misled over these issues. I believe that they ought not to be sold at all, and the community should be better protected against this kind of, well, it's a sham, it's a con, and it's been going on for a couple of hundred years, but at least 200 years ago we weren't aware of the witchcraft, I guess, that you could say is applied to these kind of products. You'd like to think that in the 21st century, we have a better understanding of these issues. So I agree. I think that pharmacists need to look more closely at the products they're providing. It's not only homeopathic products. There are many other so-called complementary and alternative medicines where there's very little evidence to substantiate the claims. There are a few exceptions, notable exceptions, of course, but with most of them, the claims just can't be substantiated. And I think we as pharmacists have an obligation to point that out to our customers. You mentioned financial interest. There are many, many products for which the evidence can be substantiated. So it's not as though we're going to go out of business because we can't provide or shouldn't provide homeopathic products. I think that it's high time that, on the one hand, the Pharmaceutical Society gave stronger guidance, and we certainly aim to do that this year, and that our pharmacist members took note of that.
All right, John, thank you very much. And I certainly do hope that the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia does tighten up its codes and controls this year, and we do see a change in what pharmacies sell.
Well, Tony, I congratulate you on bringing the issue to your listeners, and I think one of the things we can do effectively even now is to make everybody in the community as aware as possible of this particular issue.
All right, John, well, thank you very much for joining us here on Reality Check.
Pleasure, Tony. Bye-bye.
So that was John Bell you heard there from the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia. I don't know how effective they will be in convincing their members to stop selling bogus products, but at least it seems that some people within the organisation are taking the issue seriously. But what about the websites? There are hundreds of websites out there, many of them making ridiculous claims about the benefits of homeopathic remedies, and many of them selling products based on those false claims. Now, surely for those websites based in Australia, like Homeopathy Plus, for example, there must be some kind of regulatory oversight to protect the consumer. Well, in theory there is, but to find out how it actually works in practice, I spoke to Dr. Ken Harvey from La Trobe University here in Melbourne. He's been a long-time campaigner against some of the more outrageous claims made by people promoting homeopathy. And actually, in January, a complaint he made against the Homeopathy Plus website was upheld by the Complaints Resolution Panel of the Therapeutic Goods Administration. So surely that will send out a strong deterrent message to other people making false and misleading claims. Well, maybe not. Let's have a listen to that interview with Dr. Harvey now. Joining me on the line now is adjunct senior lecturer in the School of Health at La Trobe University, Dr. Ken Harvey. Ken, thank you very much for joining us here on Reality Check.
It's a pleasure, Tony.
I'd like to ask you about your recent win, or maybe I won't call it a win, a favourable decision at the Complaints Resolution Panel of the TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Administration. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
Some of the concerns about homeopathy is that they can be pushed for serious conditions and serious diseases, which can then prevent people from getting legitimate treatment, which is proven to be more effective. And there was advertisements for homeopathic immunisation from a website called Homeopathy Plus, which were making all sorts of claims that homeopathic immunisation is effective against poliomyelitis, chickenpox, meningococcal disease, etc., etc., smallpox.
Right, and these are not trivial diseases.
No, not at all. And clearly they are. And clearly there has been legitimate concerns about conventional immunisation. We know that conventional immunisation is the best and most effective way we've got of preventing serious childhood diseases, but occasionally there is the odd side effect or adverse effect. Usually it's mild, sore arms, a bit of fever, etc. But occasionally there can be more serious adverse effects. But overall, we know that the benefits of conventional immunisation are immeasurable. And when there's been scares about conventional immunisation, unfounded scares as there have been in the United Kingdom, and immunisation rates drop, then we see outbreaks of nasty childhood diseases, whooping cough, measles, etc., which kill and damage. And so I'm, you know, as a public health physician, I get particularly concerned when I see the promotion of remedies like homeopathic immunisation for serious diseases. And that indeed is a breach of the Therapeutic Goods Advertising Code.
Right.
One is not allowed to advertise, quite rightly, I think, to the public remedies, be they listed products or whatever, or even registered products for serious diseases, on the grounds that that's something you should consult with a health professional. But here, as I say, was a website that was saying that homeopathic immunisation was great for serious diseases, that was actually promoting the sale of homeopathic remedies, which kits A and kits B, which had names like Flu Stop and Fracture Complex, and were specific children's fever complex, specifically designed, as I say, for and targeting serious diseases. So I put in a complaint to the complaint resolution panel, saying that I believed that this breached a number of rules and regulations of the Therapeutic Goods Advertising Code. And yes, they were upheld. The advertiser did produce references which they thought purported to show that homeopathic immunisation was effective, but in fact none of them really stood up and none of them were regarded as acceptable by this independent complaint resolution panel, which contains a great mix of industry and independent people on it.
Right.
And so, quite rightly, the complaint was upheld and the advertiser was told to withdraw the advertisements, to withdraw any representation that you know, homeopathic immunisation could have benefits, and to publish a retraction on their website. And actually, retractions are, I believe, the most effective way of dealing with this stuff, because it costs money to actually put out a retraction, but more importantly, it corrects for misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And so my own view is that in dealing with promotional complaints, that, you know, fines and particularly retractions are important because they concentrate the mind. Interestingly enough, they were given 14 days to do this. Far more than 14 days have elapsed now. It's almost a month has elapsed. There is no retraction. The misleading things have not been taken down off the website. And that really raises, again, a fundamental problem that we have with our regulatory system, that we have a good complaint system that will produce, as I say, good determinations,
yeah,
but they have no power, to actually do anything
no
to
teeth.
Enforce those determinations.
Mm.
All they can do is a request. Now, in theory, there is a backstop. The Therapeutic Goods Administration themselves do have powers under the Therapeutic Goods Act to fine and to enforce determinations. But for reasons that aren't at all clear to me or anyone else, when non-compliance with complaint resolution panel determinations are put to the TGA, they disappear into a black hole. There's no transparency. We don't know if the TGA does anything. Certainly, there's no publicity about it. And clearly, they don't do anything because, as I say, here, at least in this and many other cases, the offending advertisements continue. So that's a problem that some of us have been concerned about, and we do believe there's not much good having rules and regulations if you don't actually follow them through with some appropriate sanctions to make sure that they're obeyed.
No, that's right. It's almost pointless having the rules and having the committee there to make decisions if they are not enforced.
Yeah, and again, I mean, this is something that I've been battling with the Parliamentary Secretary responsible, Mark Butler, who's responsible for the TJ. And they have been making noises for new Rudd government that they're aware of these concerns, they're aware of limitations of the advertising process and the complaint process. But they apparently have asked for TGA for advice. But, I mean, asking the TGA if it's never done anything about advice as to what to do, I'm not sure is very helpful. But nothing as yet has happened. And we're now, what, two and a bit years into the Rudd government, and this is another area where promises has been made but no action has taken place.
Do you know why they don't have the teeth? Is it just a lack of manpower within the TGA to follow these things up and go to courts and get the right court decisions or whatever they need?
Look, there's been a variety of reasons put, of which lack of resources is certainly one of them, but the fact remains they do get a reasonable amount of money. I mean, the TGA, they're 100% funded by the industry. I mean, some people have felt that's a concern, but they get their funds. I mean, if you want to put a product to market it in Australia, it's got to go through some TGA process, either an effective process of registration or a less effective process of listing, and fees are charged to place a product on the Australian Register of Therapeutic Goods, and also an annual fee, and that will hit the homeopathic products later this year. The legislation's been changed to include them. So, you know, the TGA is getting money for people putting those products on and keeping them on, and I fail to see why they can't be using that money to enforce some of their decisions. Now, again, they might say they've got higher priorities, but there is a specific office of complementary medicines as distinct from, you know, prescription medicine.
Yes, right, within the TGA.
Within the TGA. Mm-hmm. And one would think that it wouldn't be beyond the wit of the TGA to work out how much money they're getting from the listing of the complementaries and allocating some of those resources to monitoring and enforcement. I do believe that they may need to change some of the rules and regulations to make it easier to get judgments. To be fair to them, yes, clearly they've got to be careful, but on the other hand, a regulator that never uses a power becomes a paper tiger.
Exactly.
And I think that's with particularly these complementaries and the homeopathic products. They do appear to be a paper tiger. And clearly, you know, then complainants get disillusioned that the sponsors and the manufacturers know that they can keep on, regardless of determinations, they can keep on doing things. And that clearly is just a crazy situation. As you say, why have a large independent panel spending time and effort reviewing rules, regulations, dealing seriously with complaints, making good determinations, publishing them on the website, only to have people thumb their nose at them?
I mean, yeah, that's right.
Crazy.
Yeah, that is the point. Why?
But you need to be interviewing Mark Butler, the Parliamentary Secretary, not me, I think, on this one.
All right, well, I'll approach his office and see what he says. What I find out. All right, Dr. Ken Harvey of La Trobe University, thank you very, very much for joining us on Reality Check. And let me just say a lot of congratulations and kudos to you for picking up the baton and actually, you know, taking a complaint to the TGA and everything. I think it's really noble what you've done and what you're doing.
Well, it's bashing head on a brick wall and one gets a headache, but someone's got to do it. I mean, you know, they're really, people have really got to complain when they see stuff like this, and it's people not complaining that lets them get on with it.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the ultimate message from this interview, is that if anyone else out there feels inspired, do a bit of research and lodge a complaint, and hopefully the more people join in, we can get results.
Yep, good on you, Tony. Okay.
All right, thanks a lot, Ken. Thank you very much.
So there you have it, dear listener. Here in Australia, we have a Therapeutic Goods Administration with a panel specifically set up to receive complaints and issue decisions, but one that has never successfully acted to enforce one of its own decisions, and which, unsurprisingly, therefore has a non-compliance rate of about 50%. So that's our fantastic consumer protection system here in Australia when it comes to homeopathy and other alternative medicines. Absolutely pathetic, really. Now, I should mention that I did in fact contact Mark Butler, the Parliamentary Secretary for Health, as well as the opposition spokesperson for health. But because we're running out of time today, I'm afraid you'll have to wait until next week to hear their riveting responses. So something to look forward to there. But to sum up, the reason that people can sell homeopathic remedies in such misleading ways and even make completely false claims about their benefits is, well, partly because pharmacists who sell them are reluctant to stop selling them and thereby cut off a lucrative revenue stream. And also because the government, who really should hold ultimate responsibility for protecting the consumer, has completely taken its eye off the ball and seems unable or unwilling to take action. So a sorry state of affairs indeed. And unfortunately, it's the less informed consumers out there who pay the price for this inaction, sometimes with tragic health consequences. Okay, finally, before we get into our last song, if you have any questions or comments about what we've covered on the show, or maybe something you'd like us to cover, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony, that's T-O-N-Y, @gmail.com. And you can also visit our website to listen to past episodes of Reality Check. That's realitycheckonline.net. All right, let's listen to our final song for today. And when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
Hey, this is Adam Lambert, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9, award-winning radio.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. And the song you just heard there was J'en ai marre, or I'm Fed Up, by Alizé, a young French singer. And of course, I played that song because the movie we're about to review is a French movie. Okay, it's movie review time now on Reality Check, and the movie up for review this week is a hard-hitting new French film, A Prophet, or Un Prophète, which is in the running to win the Oscar this year for the best foreign language film. By the way, that's prophet with a PH, as in someone who delivers divine messages to humanity, not the other prophet, the financial prophet. Okay, A Prophet tells the story of 19-year-old Malik El Jebena, who's been sentenced to 6 years in jail for an unspecified crime. Malik appears to have no family connections and was seemingly brought up in various institutions and is completely alone in the world. The movie follows the 6 years he spends in prison as he learns the ropes, makes alliances, and does what he can to survive in the horrifically brutal environment. Now, this film is certainly getting a lot of acclaim. It won the Grand Prix at the 2009 Cannes Film Festival, and quite a few critics put it at number one on their list of the best films of 2009. And it currently holds a score of 98% on the film rating website Rotten Tomatoes. But before you rush off to see it on that basis, one word of warning. The film is violent, harrowing, and brutal throughout. This is not Hollywood prison life with Hollywood-style tough guys. This is really a grim, dirty, depressing place to be with really nasty, ugly inmates. The director actually used ex-prisoners as extras on the film, and I reckon they add a gritty level of realism to the whole thing. The result is not pretty in any way. And the performances of the actors are all fantastic. But these are not characters you ever want to meet, let me tell you. And I do have to give a special mention for the performance of Neil Aristrup, who plays Cesar Luciani, the head of the Corsicans inside the jail. He plays a really terrifying villain with absolutely no redeeming features. Every time you think he might show a slightly soft side or you might get a glimpse of his humanity, he turns out to be more depraved and inhuman than you ever imagined. Every time I saw him on the screen, my shoulders tensed up with dread. The other great thing about this movie is the first 20 minutes. They are absolutely riveting. Brutal, intense, hard to watch, shocking even, but riveting. This is the sequence of events where we follow Malik's entry into the prison and we, the audience, know nothing about who Malik is or what awaits him inside. We learn with him about the various factions inside the prison and who controls what. Malik tries to remain separate from any of the factions as long as he can, but he soon gets roped in by the Corsicans and forced to murder another inmate. The sequence of events leading up to the murder and the murder itself are gut-wrenchingly tense and really, really well made. I was trying not to squirm too much in my seat by the end of it. But I have to say that apart from all these positive aspects of A Prophet, well, positive if you like that sort of thing, I have to say I do agree with David Stratton from At the Movies on this one. I think this film is overrated. The movie starts with such a brilliant, disturbing, intensely focused opening up until that horrific murder. But then, unfortunately, it doesn't stay in that taut, highly focused vein. The story starts to deviate and gets a lot more complicated and a lot harder to follow, actually. We get to meet the other inmates and learn the various stories of who they're allied with and what rackets they're running. Then, after a while, Malik starts to get let out on day leave for good behavior, and so becomes of great use to the Corsican boss, Cesar. Cesar sends Malik on various errands to support his drug-running operations outside the prison, and Malik starts to form relationships with people on the outside as well as on the inside. And by the end, it just gets all a bit incomprehensible between the Corsicans and the Italians and the Muslims and their allies and the gypsy and the Egyptian and all the other characters that pop up along the way, and with all of them trying to outplay the other, and the prison guards as well all involved, and then the double cross of the double cross, or was it a double cross? I'm not even sure. Well, I have to say I was thoroughly confused by the end and couldn't even really tell what type of person Malik had become. Is he a good guy now or a bad guy? And who's with who? And what really happened? And what was the point of it all? And actually, that was the question I was left with at the end of the movie. What was the point of the whole film? At over 150 minutes, this film is way too long, and there are scenes where you really wonder, what was the point of that? Why did we need to see that? It didn't seem to add anything to the story. And, well, why is the movie called A Prophet? I don't know. I certainly enjoyed the start of this movie. I loved watching the performances, and I think a smouldering new movie star is born in the actor who played Malik, Taha Rahim. But I have to say that by the end of the whole ordeal, I was left feeling tired and frankly quite bewildered. And that brings us to the end of the 28th episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 10 o'clock next Tuesday for episode 29. Okay, have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.